on this episode of The Kinked Wire.
While I do understand that there may be this idea out there that the OBL is some magical place, the truth is that I think the ideal scenario is what I have, which is practicing on both sides of the street, so to speak, because they each pose their own challenges and they each have their own benefits.
Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR's IR Quarterly magazine. You can learn more at our website, sirweb.org/kinkedwire. In this episode, Kinked Wire host Warren Krakow speaks with interventional radiologist Brett Wickman about how he launched his office-based lab, how other IRs might do the same, and the prospects for trainees to enter this space.
Well, all right, great. We're really lucky today to have Dr. Brett Wickman here, a really big name in the peripheral vascular world, as well as the OBL world, and in that space, which is something I think we're going to try to pick your brain about a little bit today. So thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
So there's a lot of, I think, particularly among maybe some of our younger society members, I don't know if the right word is wishful thinking, but a lot of folks who seem to think of working in an OBL as sort of the promised land of interventional radiology, that it's like this Emerald City of Oz or something. And I've certainly worked in the OBL setting and the hospital setting. I'm really interested to get your perspective. What's your take on OBL IR?
Well, I would say I understand where people may have that feeling that it is some utopian type of practice or a Xanadu of IR practice. And there are parts of it that certainly are way more desirable and way more friendly to lifestyle, perhaps. But the reality is that there is no perfect place for your practice in some senses. And the reason I say that is that the OBL world has its own types of challenges, just like a hospital-based IR practice has its challenges. And I'm very fortunate that I have the best of both worlds. Mm. So we have had a practice that fortunately, as part of a diagnostic radiology practice, has embraced the idea that IR is a clinical specialty. And we felt that there was a need to compete at the office-based lab level way back in 2006. So there was enough critical mass within the group to understand the importance of that. And so while I do understand that there may be this idea out there that the OBL is some magical place, the truth is that I think the ideal scenario is what I have, which is practicing on both sides of the street, so to speak, because they each pose their own challenges and they each have their own benefits.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Again, having sort of done both myself, but not in the way you do it in that hybrid setting. So if I might ask, are you and your colleagues in the OBL also involved with the other side of the street? I mean, do you read or do you do procedures in the hospital or?
Yes, we cover, I guess our hospital is now about 530 beds. And our OBL, as I mentioned, has been open since 2006. And so we have a professional services agreement with North Florida Regional Medical Center, which is the private hospital here in Gainesville. So we provide interventional radiology services through our group's agreement. But in addition, we operate our own OBL, which is 100% physician owned. So that's our own entity. It is a combination of both types of practices where you're kind of truly independent, but that you're also hospital based. So our group, the mothership, if you will, provides diagnostic radiology services. And we, as IR, are a division of that whole group. Not a separate IR group. We are one big radiology group that just happens to have this kind of hybrid approach with our own OBL covering the hospital. We actually have some imaging center joint ventures with the hospital, as well as two independent diagnostic imaging type centers, both in Gainesville, but also in a town that's about 40 minutes east of us. So we do really have this mix of all kinds of arrangements with the hospital, without the hospital, and it seems to work well for us.
Yeah, sounds like it. It's a really kind of, I think, very intriguing approach. Now, in talking about the OBL specifically, obviously you're very well associated in the world of PAD. Do you do exclusively PAD work in that OBL?
No, we do a mix of things. And we have six interventionalists. And actually, as of July 1st, we have a seventh interventionalist. So seven bodies that really fill six spots. And within those folks, we all kind of gravitate naturally to one particular area. And mine just happens to be vascular disease, you know, PAD, mm-hmm. and venous disease and critical limb ischemia and so on. My other partners, you know, there are a few of them that do vascular work, but it's primarily myself. Just like I don't do a lot of spine intervention. The vertebroplasties and kyphoplasties and facet injections are really done by some of my partners. And a couple of my partners actually now have tremendous experience with the interventional oncology side.
Wow.
So we don't just focus in our lab on PAD, although my particular focus is on vascular disease in general. But I think the beauty of our lab is that we are diversified.
That really does sound quite exciting and, you know, sort of a one-stop shop in terms of marketing to referring docs. In an interesting way, it almost sounds like a really nice kind of quasi-academic hybrid where you can really specialize and focus on what interests you the most. That's, you know, that's something really nice. Now, are you then able to sort of, you know, see a patient in consult and then sort of make the decision, hey, this patient's really better suited for the hospital or in the OBL setting? Is that something that goes on?
Yeah, that happens on a daily basis. And, you know, part of our facility is kind of the clinic side of things where we have three rooms where we will see patients. It also includes the non-invasive lab, ultrasound machines. So that's a whole part of the building itself and part of the practice, of course. While the other side of the building, if you will, is more of the procedural suites, as well as, you know, reading areas and administrative space and so on. But that is how our practice has worked, and that's how we designed it when we first started, is that this is for patients coming into the practice, at least on the interventional radiology side, patients coming into the practice for an evaluate and treat type consult, evaluate the patient, figure out what kind of pathway they need to go through in terms of their workup for whether that is an arterial or a venous thing or an oncology thing or a spine intervention kind of thing. And then we kind of walk them through the process. So we kind of do our own patient navigation through our own system. And it seemed to work well. Back in 2006, it was relatively early in the OBL game. We had to go through the transition of making sure our referring physicians understood that this is now the pathway. That took a little bit of time to get people used to the idea that you're sending patients to us for evaluation and not just for a procedure, which is obviously something that we have been saying within SIR and within the IR community for a long time now, that you are a specialist and should be viewed as such and not just a proceduralist.
And you think back, as you suggested, that, you know, back in 2006, I personally had just finished fellowship a year earlier and certainly had ideas about going to the OBL setting, but I had no way of thinking about it. My head was not where it sounds like your guys' collective heads were, and that's really impressive. So how did you get there? How did you decide to do that? And then what did you do? You know, I'm sure there was some convincing involved with the other members of the group.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting how it came about, Warren. Honestly, at the time, like a lot of practices, we're going through a transition where there are a lot of political issues and turf issues as it pertains to peripheral intervention. And this is actually probably a couple years before we actually opened. But one of the things that came up with the conversation with the hospital was that we felt we needed to be able to compete effectively for those patients that were part of our practice, that were undergoing procedures that were professionally gratifying for us, that we really wanted to maintain our participation. And so we basically told them that we feel like we needed to be able to compete. And they said, that's fine. Do whatever you feel you need to do to compete. And so that was what we did. We opened up our lab and we started converting all these patients, primarily outpatients, that were going to the hospital to come to our center. Quite honestly, the hospital, as you know, has limited infrastructure for interventional radiology suites. You know, that real estate is at a premium in a hospital. They can't just add on things very easily. And so they don't have the capacity. If we were to take right now the procedures that we do in our OBL and take them right to the hospital, there's no way that they would have the capacity to do that. They'd have to build two more rooms. And so we say, you're welcome. whenever these things come up, you're welcome that we're helping you offset some of this. And that's how it all started. And I will add that we had the benefit within our radiology group of two things, really. Number one is one of my former partners had a very busy spine service. And so those procedures were already being done in one of our diagnostic imaging centers before we opened up our OBL.
Okay.
So there was kind of a pathway for patients to come in for referrals through that established service line. And so we kind of had a built-in thing that was portable that we could take to the OBL right away. And so that was part of the success. And also, again, as you mentioned, there had to be a lot of convincing that this pathway was going to be good for us long term. And we were able to convince the majority of the group that this was going to be a viable entity. And obviously, we've been at it for 15 years now.
That's really terrific and really a lot of foresight on, you know, your part, certainly in the group's part, and dodging those salvos from the hospital sounds right. Like that worked out well. You know, and I'm sure there's probably almost unquantifiable downstream opportunities for the hospital with patients you're seeing in the outpatient setting and, sure. and so on. So with people that can work together, things tend to work out, you know, for everybody, I've found. So interesting, you know, we started out talking about the sort of younger trainee or someone just out of training. Is there a place for that kind of an IR in the OBL world? And, you know, I've just finished my fellowship. Now I want to, you know, start an OBL practice. And if so, how do you get there?
Yeah, I think that's a trend that we're seeing here in the last few years with some of these turnkey operations, these private companies that are focused on opening up centers or franchising them in different cities throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a potential for an IR trainee coming right out of fellowship and going into one of those type of facilities. And certainly, we just hired a fellow out of the University of Florida that's starting this month that wasn't necessarily seeking an OBL specifically, but he's joining our group and we happen to have an OBL. So I think that there are different models out there if somebody is interested in the OBL space. I think the one word of caution that I would give is, if you're going to look exclusively at just an office-based lab practice, what's the environment around your center? Who's your competition going to be? What is the reputation of the center itself? Where are you going to get your patients? Are you going to be there to see patients, work them up, do the procedures, do their management, do their follow-up? All that kind of stuff is important. Or are you getting plugged into a situation where you're just there and there's a list of 8 cases, you knock them out, and then you go home? I think that that is kind of anathema to what we are trying to preach as an interventional radiology community. We've gotten away from this idea that we're just doing the procedures that come through and they get put on a list. So for the longevity of the specialty and for the individual IRs, I think it's important to know actually what you're getting into if you're just going into an OBL-based job.
I completely agree with you. And I think too, you know, is there a bit of a clinical stretch to go right from training into the OBL? At least I found at times that, you know, you're on a bit of a higher tightrope in the OBL setting. I don't know if that's your experience because you don't have the services of the hospital there. God forbid you need to intubate somebody or
right.
So there's an argument some might make that, you know, better to get some experience under your belt as a practicing IR, you know, no longer a trainee in the hospital where you have those sort of comforts before. And, you know, obviously there's different takes on it.
Sure. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that there is an element of security when somebody's coming right out of training because that's where we all grew up and that's where we all cut our teeth doing these procedures. So it's kind of a natural tendency to feel more secure in that environment. But by the time we opened up our lab, I was 9 years into my practice.
Okay.
So to your point, I had already established some of those relationships with referring physicians.
Right.
With people at the hospital in terms of physicians and administrators. And so I had a certain reputation and my partners had reputations that were all good and we were appreciated by the staff at the hospital. I think that would be a bigger challenge, certainly coming in right out of training into an OBL where you didn't know anybody. And if you had to transfer a patient for whatever reason, they wouldn't know who you were or you wouldn't know who they are. You maybe don't know the ER people. And so it is a little bit more complicated, I think, if you're coming right out of fellowship into an OBL-based job. But usually those centers have already gotten the transfer agreements with the local hospital. Or perhaps there are other people on staff at the OBL that can bring you along and kind of help you continue your fellowship in just a different environment.
Yeah, exactly. Which sounds like for your new fellow or, you know, the person who just completed fellowship who's starting, sounds like that they'll get to benefit from that, which is a great setup, which gets me sort of to one of the other things I wanted to talk about. You know, at least in my experience, in training, I never had exposure to any type of OBL, outpatient or anything. I mean, is that something that your group does? Do you provide that? And is there a role for that in IR training?
You know, that's a topic that's been under consideration through OEIS, which Outpatient Endovascular and Interventional Society, as well as a little bit within SIR. How do we get trainees coming out to be familiar with this OBL environment? How do we get exposure? How do we introduce the concept to them? How do we get them to understand this is what we do on a daily basis? How do we increase their exposure? And I think that the answer to that really kind of is yet to be developed. I will tell you that one of our earlier partners that we hired, not the most recent one, but the one before that, did kind of a little mini rotation through our center. Once we knew that we were going to hire him, it was like, okay, this is going to be a great way to give him a kind of an early orientation. Having said that, we don't really have a formal pathway where every month, for example, we're having somebody from Rush University or Georgetown or wherever coming in to rotate through us to kind of get a sample of it. We're a traditional private practice. We don't really have it set up that way. But I think that those opportunities will be out there. We just have to cultivate that process and figure out how to execute on it.
I think you're right. And you know, potentially, if we build that road, maybe we will get more people who are able to think in that way that your group thought early on in terms of establishing an OBL. It's exciting stuff. It's like a lot of stuff in IR. We're always, it seems, on the cutting edge of change in all aspects. And this is great. And what you've described in your opportunity really sounds like a great model and a way for, I think, IRs to really experience the sort of full breadth of the specialty.
We've been really fortunate. Again, it hasn't been without challenge. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of challenges to your staff. The idea of getting people that are educated on how a patient comes into the system and not just walks in for a chest x-ray or what have you, walks in with an order in their hand from their referring physician for an ultrasound of their gallbladder.
Right.
I mean, there's so much behind the scenes before you're actually up and running that you have to get buttoned up before you open the doors, because it is a little bit of a paradigm shift from a traditional diagnostic radiology or traditional general radiology type practice.
Right. I think that's a great point, and one that we shouldn't gloss over, that you can have all the clinical chops in the world, but as you pointed out, you've got to have a whole team rowing in the same direction. And you can have technically very skilled RTs, but they have to have that approach that you describe, which, just like IRs, they just may not have been exposed to that if they've always worked in a hospital, for example.
Right. Right. That's for sure.
Yeah. So there's a lot to do. It's not just buy a C-arm and get an 18 gauge needle
right.
and go, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you have to have kind of a realistic sense of your referral patterns. Probably that's the most important thing. And one of the reasons why OBLs can fail is that you have this vision in your mind that it's all going to be rainbows and unicorns and all that kind of stuff. But that's far from the case, because if you overestimate your referral base, or if you have too grand of a vision, but your referrals don't support that, then you're going to have trouble right out of the gate. So.
Right.
Have a formal business plan. Make sure you've picked a good location. Again, if you're doing this from scratch.
Obviously, I think the lesson we can all learn from your story is really plan things out and think things through as much as possible. Cover all the bases.
Right.
This has been fantastic. I'd like to thank you. I do have one more question that we've been asking everybody of late. If you weren't or couldn't be an interventional radiologist for whatever reason, what would you be doing instead, do you think?
Okay. No doubt I would be a football coach.
Really?
No
okay.
Doubt.
Did you play?
I played at the University of Florida back in the mid-80s, and I was telling this story to somebody yesterday that after my second year of medical school, which if you think about that, going back to the first 2 years of medical school, it was like undergrad, but on steroids, right?
You're
drinking from the fire hose here of all this content and knowledge. And after the first 2 years, I was exhausted. I was spent. I wasn't sure if I was cut out for it.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was a new head coach coming to the University of Florida, a guy by the name of Steve Spurrier, who is very well known. And I asked one of my mentors, who actually was the wide receiver coach at the University of Florida my very first year, when I was Richard, a guy named Lee McGriff, who also happened to be my hero growing up because he played wide receiver at the University of Florida. I told him that I was a little frustrated. I was kind of burned out on this whole medical school thing. And I said, I think I'm going to drop out and I'm going to call Coach Spurrier and see if he needs an assistant. He said, Brett, you don't want to have your livelihood depend on what a 17-year-old kid does in front of 90,000 fans. And I said, okay, message heard. And obviously, you know, I've been practiced 24 years now and very sage advice from a very respected mentor of mine. But that would be what I would do if I was not an interventional radiologist.
That's great. That's amazing. And just sort of thinking about it, I wonder too, among many qualities a successful head coach would need is, you know, the ability to think about multiple things happening at once, which it sounds like you had to do in setting up your practice, your OBL. And you wonder now, the world of IR would miss you. How many more national championships would the Gators have if things had gone differently?
Well, I certainly would hope that that would have been the case. And I think it's a really good question that you ask, and one that we all should be thinking of as we kind of go through our careers, or, you know, what are our outside interests really is kind of where that question hits to the heart of. Because we all need to have those things as a way of decompressing the constant pressures and the anxiety sometimes that develops with the busy practice and the time demands and family issues and so on.
Speaking of time demands, I can only imagine what yours are. So I want to give you a chance to get back to things, but I'd really like to thank you for being with us and certainly educating us a lot on the world of OBLs, but so much more too. So wish you all the best and look forward to having you back with us soon.
Thank you, Warren. Appreciate the opportunity.
That was Dr. Brett Whitman describing the path of his OBL success. We thank Dr. Whitman for his time and you for listening to the King Choir. Our host is Dr. Warren Craycock. Our editor is Dr. Jamie Shaw. Our manager is Dr. Jason Fisher. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas for us, drop us a line at irq@sirweb.org.